Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good morning. I'm Jane Marie Schaefer, and this is the Herzog Law Firm Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour, where we answer your questions about estate planning, Medicaid planning, probates of estates, guardianships, and other related matters. It's a live call-in show. We welcome your questions. You can give us a call at 518-476-5900. And today I have two special guests with me. I have Blaze Bryant from Consumer Directed Choices and Sarah, whose last name I will not attempt, from NYSARC Trust Services. And Blaze, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your organization?
Well, thank you, Jane Marie. Good morning. It's good to be back on the show. Even though every time you have me on, it's freezing. So what does that say? I feel like there's a pattern here.
Yes,
I'm the customer service and outreach associate with Consumer Directed Choices. We work with seniors and people with disabilities who want to hire their own home care staff so they could hire neighbors, friends, family members to help them out with their home care. You do need to be Medicaid eligible, but if you don't have Medicaid, that's okay too, because there are a couple of other programs that we work with people as well. The Expanded In-Home Services for the Elderly Program, EISEP, E-I-S-E-P. That's run by the county, Albany, Schenectady counties, just to name a couple of counties. It does exist everywhere, but just to give you that example. And then we also have an Alzheimer's program through the EDI, as well as the Alzheimer's Association down in the Hudson Valley area.
Well, thank you, Blaze. And let me let Sarah introduce herself. And Sarah, perhaps you can educate me on your last name.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Jane Marie. We appreciate you inviting us to join you this morning. My name is Sarah Seswick. I'm the Director of Outreach at NYSARC Trust Services. And we are a not-for-profit organization that administers pooled trusts. This morning, we're going to be talking about how our pooled trust programs can help someone qualify financially to access Medicaid services so that they can get the benefits of the health coverage and also access to home care services, be able to qualify for programs like Blaze's Home Care. We also help people with disabilities and qualifying adults protect benefits if they already receive those services and need to spend down funds that are in their name in order to maintain their eligibility for those services. So we'll be focusing today on home care, but our services really do serve people with disabilities all throughout New York State. We provide services in all 62 counties, particularly the majority of the individuals we serve are using our services to access home care so that they can afford to continue to live in the community for as long as possible. By putting that money into a trust account, they're able to use it for their living expenses and things that they need to be able to continue to afford to pay their bills and get personal needs throughout the month so that they can access the services, but also be able to stay in their home, in the community, among their family and loved ones.
Thank you, Sarah. Just some background, Sarah and Blaze and I have known each other for a while, and we've been doing seminars together for quite a bit. And we do this seminar where we do talk about how you can receive care in your home, and we each talk about the different services we can offer to keep you at home. So that's what we're going to focus on today a little bit about, Medicaid care at home. And that's something we do talk about a lot on the show, is community Medicaid, because we know most people would rather be in their own homes than in a nursing home, if at all possible. And, Blaze and Sarah offer both services that are necessary to help in this process, right, to help get you in the community Medicaid program. So it's Sarah? your last name?
I'm sorry, what was that, Jamie?
It's Sedgwick. Is that how you say your last
yes.
name?
Sedgwick.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you're getting
your name.
Yeah. Are you getting your last name?
Mm-hmm. Yes, very soon. Coming up in June 2022.
Great. I hope it's an easier last name for you than that name.
Yes, it will be. Grimes. Much easier and a lot easier to spell.
Right.
And Jane Marie is singing Hallelujah, Praise the Lord in your head, in her head. Even though
right? I'll, I got to be honest with you. Getting emails. Emails will come to me more often.
Although, in honesty, your last name really is not as difficult as people make it out to be.
It's true. It's just the two Z's and only one vowel.
Right. So it's a good Wheel of Fortune last name. I don't know if anyone told you that.
That's true. No, that so was
we're not. Yeah, no vowels or consonants here. Give us a call, 518-476-5900.
That's right. If you have a strange last name, you can call and chime in on this. So it's also cool that Sarah's getting married and Blaze, you're getting married also, right?
In a year plus, yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry, not so pressure.
Well, no, because, still figuring that out, because we recently settled into a new house here, so one thing at a time.
That's fantastic.
To make an oldies reference, the Johnny Cash song, One Piece at a Time.
That's true. And I'm glad that to have you both on the show, and I'm glad also that we did not have to go into the studio this morning with the cold weather out there. Even though we miss seeing Ben, it is nice to be able to call in as we've been doing recently.
Yes, I hope everyone is staying warm out there.
All right. So what we have done when we've done our seminars recently is we've added in a case study, and people really like the case study because it kind of helps you think about your own situation and how does this apply to you, right, rather than just talking about all the rules in general. So I thought that we'd talk a little bit about, we'll introduce a case study, talk about a situation that could be either yourself or your mother or your grandmother or a family relative. And then we'll talk about what each of us can do to help a family in that situation with our different services. So today we're going to talk about, in this example, Jordan, who is a woman who's 68 years old, and she's widowed, living at home. And she has different medical needs. I won't use the fancy medical names, but she has problems with vision and problems with mobility, and she needs help at home, to stay at home. And her daughter currently helps her at home to do different things so that she can stay independent. And she has, and we'll get more into the details, as we talk, she has a monthly income of about $2,400 a month, which is a decent income, but we'll talk about how that works in with the Medicaid levels. And she owns her own home. She has a small IRA and some small savings, again, which is very typical of clients that we see. So typically, if this client came in to see us with her daughter, we would be talking about how can you stay home and stay independent as long as you can, or not as long as you can, forever, right? Because no one wants to go to a nursing home. So we would be talking to them about community Medicaid. Right now, maybe she doesn't need a whole lot of help, but she's anticipating needing more help in the future. And with her income, she couldn't afford to pay for that help presently. So community Medicaid would let her pay someone, I'm sorry, not let her pay someone, let Medicaid pay someone to come into the home to help her. And so one of the programs you can utilize under community Medicaid is the Consumer Directed Personal Assistance Program. So So I'll go to you, Blaze, first. And what could you tell this family about that program and how it would help her?
Sure. So as I said off the top of the show, we work with seniors and people with disabilities who want to self-direct their own home care, meaning Jordan's daughter could be paid through this program to take care of her mom. That really is critical. And since COVID began almost 2 years ago, which it's hard to believe that we have been in this, frankly, vortex for this long, you're seeing a lot more families, and I'm hearing a lot more families as I talk with people about this program every single day, who want to be able to take care of their family member or a friend to help a friend, I mean, or neighbors helping neighbors, because people do not want to be in nursing homes, because let's face it, and I'm not saying this from a place of being political, nursing homes have been some of the worst places to be because of COVID. And all the numbers out there prove that. So Jordan's daughter could work for Jordan to help her with her needs and to take care of her.
Yeah, that's right. And with the COVID has changed that a lot, because many nursing homes shut down visitation. And we know the stories, we have heard them, of people who were not able to get in to visit family members for very long times. And they were isolated in the nursing homes. And so there's always been a trend towards getting care at home, but I think we've seen that increase recently. With not wanting to be in a nursing home, you know, besides the fact of just not wanting to catch COVID in a nursing home, right? Where at home you can put more, you know, restrictions in place so you can protect yourself better.
Right. And the other piece of this too, Jane Marie, is there was a very real home care shortage before COVID. Mm-hmm. And much like the trend toward home care has been put on the express track because of COVID, the home care shortage has been amplified. A thousandfold, it seems like. So one of the things that we here at Consumer Directed Choices have done, because we hear how difficult and we know how difficult it is to recruit aides, and I know this as well personally, being a consumer, we have, and we did this in early November, we launched a workforce recruitment portal that aspiring personal assistants, because you work for the, because an aide works for the consumer or the designated representative, which is a person that can be appointed by the consumer to assume the employing responsibilities on their behalf due to discomfort or disability. So the aide works for that person. They don't work for us. But what we have done is we have given a platform to personal assistants to sign up, that they can sign up, and it's totally free, cdchoices.org. You can go to our website and find out more information there. Again, that's cdchoices.org. And an aide can sign up, and what's really nice from the consumer side as well is, and this also applies to being a personal assistant, there are a bunch of criteria that you can search so that you have the best possible job match, and you have a sense of what you're getting into before you get into it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And just to go back, because we use this lingo a bit, and I realize maybe we should just explain it for everyone. So, you know, the consumer in this case is mom, right? So it's the person who needs the services at home. And if mom is, you know, has maybe Alzheimer's or some cognitive deficit and she can't manage everything, she has to have a designated representative to handle all the paperwork for her, and that would be the daughter in this case. Okay, but so just to clarify that. But what's fantastic about this is she has a daughter. Go ahead, Blaise.
If I could just step in for a second. So in this case, Jordan is a self-directing consumer. So she is hiring her daughter directly just to, because I realized that I did a bad job of not distilling this out because I haven't had enough coffee in my system. So that's just the reality. So in this case, Jordan is the self-directing consumer.
That's correct. But what you are talking about with the online portal is really it's a place to search for assistance to work for you. And as we've been discussing, there is a shortage. And, typically in the past, people would kind of look around, like network through their friends, their neighbors, their, church or synagogue. They would try and find people to work for them that way. But this is just one other place you can look, and it's an online portal. As you said, you can put in criteria, people within a certain distance and other things to work for you, certain hours that you need. And, of course, there's no guarantee you'll find someone, but there is a lot of people signed up on that, and it gives you some more choices, beyond your family members.
For sure. And I can just hear right now, what if I'm not good on the computer? That's okay. Yeah. You can give us a call and we will work with you. Now, the one thing I do want to say is that that you do have to be enrolled in our program to use the portal. That's just the cost of doing business. So I do want to be very clear about that so that people aren't, getting their hopes up if they're calling us on Tuesday, since we're closed in observance of Martin Luther King Day. They call us on Tuesday and want to immediately use the portal. So just to, not to sound like that person, but I just want the expectations to be realistic.
No, that's true. And that's important to point out there. So, all right, so let's go back to our case study. So mom has decided that she is going to use the community Medicaid program. She's going to hire her daughter to work for her under this Medicaid program. Talk a little bit about the process of how she gets signed. I'll talk more about the Medicaid eligibility, but assuming she's Medicaid eligible, how does she sign up with the Consumer Directed Choices, and is that a hard process?
It's really, in the grand scheme of navigating the system, it is a relatively simple process. So the first step is having Medicaid or being Medicaid eligible, number one. Number two is contacting your Medicaid plan, whether that's through the County Department of Social Services or a managed care plan such as a Fidelis, CDPHP, Nascentia, VNSNY Choice. There are a few others that we have contracts with as well. So that's step number two. Step number three is a doctor determining that you have a need for home care. And that process might be changing, so I'm just being a little bit vague by saying a doctor will determine that you have that you are eligible for home care. Then step number four is being assessed to determine how many hours of home care you are authorized for by your Medicaid plan. Then step number five is choosing an agency, a fiscal intermediary. So essentially our main job here at Consumer Directed Choices is to make sure that the aides that you hire as a consumer or as a designated representative are paid, and we bill the Medicaid for the hours. That way the program is at no cost to you as the consumer. I do get this question a fair amount, so I just want to throw it out there while it's fresh in my brain here. If someone is power of attorney and being a designated representative? Because I get the question all the time of, could I be a designated representative for someone if I am a power of attorney? And the answer is yes. You don't necessarily need to be the designated representative or whatnot if you automatically have power of attorney. The consumer gets to make that call on who that person is.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And, you know, often we see families helping out where maybe, just as an example, I've had, you know, where they make one child a designated rep so they can handle all the paperwork, and then the other kids work on either providing the care or coordinating the care. If you have more than one child, that works out, you know. You just want to find someone to be the designated rep who is good with paperwork because they're overseeing the timesheets and the financial part of this.
Well, and it's not only good with paperwork, but it's also someone who is willing to employ staff and supervise them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean this disrespectfully, but people sometimes need to be supervised.
Right. So that leads me to a comment about how, so this program is different from other Medicaid programs, because in other Medicaid programs that are similar, you're going to get care at home, they're providing hours of care at home, but a home health agency is supplying the aides for you. So you're not specifically hiring and firing those aides. They just, you know, the agency hires them, they show up at your door every day in a perfect world, right? And they work that certain number of hours. But in this program, you are hiring and firing the aides. So if there's a problem with the aides, you have to handle that, right? Either, you know, telling them what you want done or maybe firing them and hiring someone else. So you're
exactly
in, right.
Exactly. And, I mean, for example, I mean, so the way to really parse this out is, as a consumer, I am a business. And I am the CEO of me, and I'm in charge of personnel. Now, I completely ripped that off from our good friend Denise, who has been on the show, and my coworker and dear friend. So that's really the way it works.
Mm-hmm. And of course, if you're having someone take care of you, it should be someone that you want, who is doing what you want them to do for you. Right. And that's sometimes hard for people to be in the as the employer, and you help people with that, right? If they have needs, guidance on how to work with their aides, and you know, guidance on discipline or whatever else needs, right?
That's correct. So we do have peer mentors on staff. I happen to be one of them. Where I can, as a consumer, because I know what it's like, be there to assist another consumer or a designated representative through those sort of negotiations. And I'll give you an example. I was talking with someone the other day who said, well, my aide, you know, they're wonderful and all. They're late all the time. What do I do? I go, start by telling them that you need them there X amount of time earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Because the reality is, as a supervisor, sometimes you can't always change behavior. So sometimes you have to do what you can to change the structure. If a behavior isn't going to change, if the person's doing great work, if the biggest issue is punctuality, I mean, do what you can to offset that.
Mm-hmm. And that's great advice, and that's examples of some of the advice you give to consumers when they call in. So I know I'm just going to remind everyone that we will take questions. If you have any questions, you can call in at 518-476-5900. If you have questions about the community Medicaid program or for Blaze or Sarah about how they can help individuals who want community Medicaid. And I know we've been focusing a lot on, you know, having the AIDS in your home. And Sarah, we will get to after the break, where we talk more about the financial eligibility and how that plays into this. And before we get on, let me say that we have webinars coming up. We've taken a little bit of a break over the holidays and such, and we have a week of webinars coming up on January 24th, that week. And on Monday at 2 o'clock, we have a webinar on how to plan your estate. On Tuesday, January 25th at 2 o'clock, we have what to do when a loved one dies. On Wednesday, January 26th at 2 o'clock, we have aging in place. And if you're interested in what we're talking about today, I would say aging in place is a good webinar to watch, where there's a lot, some more details on the Medicaid financial eligibility side of this. Let's see, on Thursday, January 27th at 2 o'clock, we have wills versus trust. And that's a really popular one. People don't always understand the difference between a will and a trust and what probate is. So that's really a good one to listen to. And Friday, January 28th at 2 o'clock, we have Medicaid and estate planning myths. And there are many myths out there that we try and correct about Medicaid. And, you know, one I hear is, oh, isn't it a 7-year look-back period? And I'm like, no, it's a 5-year look-back period still. That's just one example. We go through many of those myths. And, you know, we're still doing Zoom for now, so you can register on our website. At some point, we hope to go back to in-person, but maybe late spring, we'll see how that goes. So we're going to, as I said, after the break, get back to the case study and talk about how Jordan can qualify financially for community Medicaid. You know, even though her income and her assets don't really seem too high, they're rather modest. They are definitely above the Medicaid level. But there are ways she can qualify both on the income side and on the asset side. And Sarah's organization helps you if your income is too high. And we'll talk a little bit about that after the break.
That's right. We'll take our break right here. We'll be back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate Medicaid Planning Hour coming up right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, Executive Woods in Clifton Park, and 130 North Front Street in Kingston. Our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, or Harry, please call us during normal business hours Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office, 518-581-8131. Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010. And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Hi, welcome back to the Herzog Law Firm Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour. I am Jay Marie Schaefer, and I am joined today by two special guests, Blaze Bryant from Consumer Directed Choices and Sarah Siswick from NYSARC. And we are talking today about how to stay home and receive care in your home under a Medicaid program called Community Medicaid, and specifically consumer-directed personal assistance. And we've been talking a bit with Blaze in the first part of the show about how the consumer-directed program works. And basically under that program, you can find and hire either family, friends, neighbors, other individuals to work for you at home, and they get paid by Medicaid. But there's another piece to this puzzle, and that's how do you qualify for Medicaid? Your income and your assets have to be below a certain level to qualify for Medicaid. And we we're talking about a case study. We're using a case study as an example to talk about these issues. And in our case study, we have a woman, Jordan, who is, in case you didn't catch the first half of the show, I'll just go over the case study again. So she's 68 years old. She lives at home alone. She has some vision and mobility problems. So she does need additional help to stay independent. But let's look at her finances for a minute. So her income she has, which is, you know, probably not atypical of most people. She has a Social Security check of $1,100 per month, a small pension of $500 per month, and she has an IRA, and she has to take required distributions from that, and that's about $875 a month, so rounding that off is $2,400 a month of income. Now, that is over the Medicaid allowable limit. So, Sarah, I'll just let you talk about that a bit, about what that is and how what the spend down is and how she could qualify for Medicaid.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Jane Marie. And for everyone listening in, we just crossed over into 2022. So those income and resource limits, the amount of money that you have to look at as far as whether or not you're eligible for benefits, those change year to year. And so we just crossed into 2022. And in order to be eligible for Medicaid benefits, a person cannot have any more than $934 a month. And that's for a single individual, someone who's unmarried, like our case study here, Jordan. And so she's around $2,400 or $2,500 a month. That's pretty, not significant, but quite high over that Medicaid limit. And so in order to become financially eligible so that she's able to qualify because her income is too high, that amount that she is over the limit, which is just around $1,500 a month, is referred to as her excess income or her surplus monthly income, it may be called. Now, in New York State, we're very fortunate that because she is over the age of 65 and in need of these home care services, she qualifies to be able to spend down the amount of that income that's above the limit and actually access those services despite the fact that her income is too high. And she can do that in a couple different ways. She can pay that money to Medicaid each month. That will automatically qualify her for services. She could use it towards the cost of her medical expenses, and she would have to submit receipts to Medicaid until she reaches, pays enough medical bills up to that amount, kind of similar to a deductible plan. But she's looking to access Medicaid for home care services. So she really needs her Medicaid activated at the beginning of every month. And by paying the money to Medicaid or using it towards medical expenses, she's not able to use that money for the things that she really needs it for, which is her home care expenses, her to pay her rent in her apartment, her electricity bill, cable, cell phone, you know, those monthly expenses she has. It would put her in a position where she may not actually be able to afford to continue to live in the community. So in New York State, we're very fortunate. We're one of only a few states that allow you to deposit your excess into what's called a pooled trust. And a pooled trust is a special type of irrevocable supplemental needs trust, which allows a not-for-profit organization to manage funds on behalf of an individual with a disability in order to help them qualify and maintain their financial eligibility for Medicaid and other means-tested benefits. So in this case, Jordan can deposit that money into a pooled trust. Each month, she'll put that amount of her income into the trust, and that will qualify her for services. The money that goes into the trust is now then available to her to use for the things that are not covered by her Medicaid and can be used to help her pay her monthly living expenses.
So this, as many clients say to me, this sounds too good to be true, right? So her income is, you know, let's say $2,500 a month. Right? It's more than the amount.
Absolutely. It sometimes can, because it really gives people the best of both worlds. And sometimes I say, you know, you have the option to kind of have your cake and eat it too. You can qualify for the Medicaid services and still continue to benefit from your monthly income, that income that you need to be able to continue to pay your expenses so that you have the ability to live in your home and stay in the community for as long as possible.
I know, that's fantastic. So you can have your income, even though it's over that Medicaid amount, you can use the trust to pay your other expenses. Now, if you can just go over what kind of expenses can she pay for? You know, can she buy, you know, pay for a car? Could she buy groceries? What can she pay for?
Yeah, absolutely. So for in Jordan's case, she's got, once we take her total income, Medicaid will subtract out the amount that she's, you know, the Medicaid income limit to determine how much she is over. And that's the amount she's going to be depositing into the trust each month. They'll tell you right down to the penny what needs to be deposited. From there, there are some expenses for the trust, the cost of the administration of the trust, but those are very nominal compared to, you know, giving 100% of that to Medicaid. And once those costs are deducted, she would have, you know, just around $1,400 a month available for her to be able to use for her monthly expenses. Now, we're going to typically look at trying to pay living expenses first. We want to cover her basic needs and make sure she has a roof over her head, her bills are being paid, and she's got food in the refrigerator. So we're going to look at her rent typically first, or mortgage in the case of someone who is living in a home and has more property expenses. One of the main reasons for that is we can pay those types of expenses automatically. That's a fixed recurring expense. So you can submit a copy of her lease and we can pay the amount of her portion of her spend down towards that rent each month. And that helps automate that process because in order to use the funds in the trust, the individuals do need to submit requests authorizing us to use the money for a particular expense, and we need to document what we're using that money for in the event that Medicaid asks us to show proof of that. So we typically look at, you know, larger bills. What are things we can do to help reduce the amount of paperwork that Jordan and her family need to submit to the trust and make it as easy as possible? So start by looking at her rent. Her rent's a little over $1,200 a month. So that's going to eat up a large portion of what she's putting into the trust, make sure that that bill is being paid every month. And then we're going to look at, you know, with the remaining amount, we got about $200, $250 to work with. We're going to look at paying her utility bill, maybe cable, cell phone bill. Typically, I like to advise clients that it's the best practice to pick a bill that you can always go get another copy of in case, you know, somehow that gets lost or you don't get it in time. Because we do need to document those expenses. She certainly can use the trust for things like groceries, over-the-counter items, if there's things that her benefits aren't covering. By simply going to a store, someone could buy those items for Jordan, and we could reimburse that person. She could put those purchases on a credit card, and she could submit the credit card bill with some itemized receipts, and we can pay her credit card company. And I just want to touch base on that really quickly. The reason for that is that in order to protect Jordan's eligibility for benefits, once the funds go into the trust, we cannot return them to Jordan by giving her cash or putting any money in her bank account. That would really undo the protection that we've created by putting that money into the trust. And so in order for her to, you know, go out and do that type of spending, it can be helpful to use a credit card because we're always going to have to pay a third party. We're going to pay the landlord for her rents. We're going to pay the utility company directly for her bills. Or if she makes a purchase, we can reimburse someone for buying that for her or pay her credit card company for those purchases.
Thanks, Sarah. Yeah, it's really great how she can have all these expenses paid. And before I ask you the next question, I'm just reminding everyone this is a call-in show. If you have questions about, you know, the spend down or Nice Arc or how to use consumer-directed choices, please give us a call at 518-476-5900. Or, of course, if you have any other just general questions about elder law or Medicaid planning, we're here to answer that for you. And so, Sarah, I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Blaze, is that people will say, how hard is it to sign up for this?
So the process to get started with this program is pretty quick, and it's relatively simple. If you do determine you have a need for Medicaid, typically, you know, the process is going to be to look at your resources first, make sure you're down, you know, got your assets down below that limit. applying for Medicaid, they'll determine the amount of your spend down. And to set up a pooled trust, you simply fill out an application to join the program. The application is typically signed by the individual who's in need of services. However, in circumstances where, let's say, someone has Alzheimer's or dementia, that application can be signed by someone with the appropriate power of attorney or a legal guardian as well. Once you've signed that application, it does need to be notarized. And we're looking for some supporting documentation, a copy of the individual who's looking for services, Social Security card, and their Social Security award letter, which is going to indicate their benefit type to us and give us the information that we need to establish the account. And then from there, they do need to fund the trust. So along with the paperwork and supporting documentation, we need an initial opening deposit of at least $300. Now, some people choose to open the trust with the $300. That covers the one-time enrollment fee to join, and it will leave them with a small amount of money in their account to kind of cover any monthly charges until they receive their approval from Medicaid. Other people wait until they know what their spend down is going to be, and as long as their spend down is greater than $300, they can establish the account with that initial spend down deposit. Once the account is set up, it seems like everything's done, but that's the easy part. The next step is to make sure that Medicaid is aware that you're using a pooled trust. Medicaid needs to know where that spend down is going so that they activate services. So once we have reviewed your application, it takes about a week's time for us to review the account. As long as everything's in good order, we'll establish a bank account. In about a week, you'll have your pooled trust open and ready to begin receiving your monthly deposits. And then we will provide you with the executed documents, an acceptance letter showing when you made your deposit into the trust, and we can also send a verification of that deposit to the Medicaid agency. So we'll send that to whoever's on the application is noted as being responsible for providing that to Medicaid, and that really closes the loop on this process so that Medicaid knows that you're participating in a pooled trust and they will activate your services.
Sarah, Jay Marie, and Blaze, we do have a caller this morning. We have George in Johnstown.
Good morning, George. How are you?
Good morning. I'm the best way for me to ask my question is to outline what we want to do. We have a trust. It's with your bank. I mean, pardon me, yes. with your firm. And yes. What we want to do is we're going to be selling our primary residence, which is in the trust.
Yeah.
And I understand that the money takes on the position of the property, so it's still protected. Am I right on that?
Yes, you're right on that, yes.
Okay. The next question is, we want to put this money in an investment account registered with an investment firm.
Mm-hmm.
And we would like to take out a specific amount each month to cover our living expenses.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because we're going to be paying rent from now on, and it's going to be, you know, sizable. And okay. We're wondering the process or the procedure. I know the trustee would have to get involved. Mm-hmm. And my second question is, if we remove a certain amount of that money,
mm-hmm.
let's say X, I understand that what we remove will be out of the trust and it will not be protected. But my mm-hmm. question is, how can we distribute money out of that on a monthly basis, mm-hmm. out of the money that's still in the trust, that's in the investment account?
Okay, sure. So that's a great question, and that's a typical question that people get, that they sell the house, but they now need to use that money for something. And the answer is, we have to work around what the trust document says and the Medicaid law says. So we're not going to be able to take monthly distributions from the trust, okay? But because the trust says that you're not allowed to receive any principal, right? The trust says that you can receive the income. So if you invest those funds, you know, whatever interest or dividends that money earns, you could receive that directly. But that's not going to be enough probably for what you need. So instead, what you can do is something called a partial revocation of trust.
And that's an agreement that you and all of the trust beneficiaries sign that lets you take out a lump sum of money. So you could do an estimate of what your living expenses would be for the next, you know, 6 months, 12 months, whatever, and then do a one-time withdrawal of that lump sum. And that's the way that you can do this to get the money for your living expenses. And then you can do that again, you know, next year. You have to do it periodically. The trust is not able to be accessed monthly. But you can do it by doing this lump sum withdrawal and then using that to pay your expenses.
All right, so what you're saying, if I may, what you're saying is if you know you're going to need X amount of dollars to cover your rent for the next 12 months, you can go in once a year, withdraw the X amount of dollars, and it will be used to pay your rent. And the trustee would have to agree to this. Am I correct?
Exactly, yes. That's what I'm saying. The trustee would have to agree to it, and everyone would have to sign off on it. Yes.
Would that have to be done every year?
Yes.
As far as the signing off and everything.
Yes, each time you do that, you're partially revoking the trust, so it needs you and all of the beneficiaries to sign an agreement.
Okay, now my next question is sort of an expansion of my first question. But if you withdraw X amount of dollars to cover, let's say, to cover your rent for the next 12 months, once that money is out and it's setting aside someplace, wherever it is, then that money becomes vulnerable. Am I correct?
That's correct. Whatever you withdraw is not protected anymore. But whatever, even the trust is still protected. So, there's a balance. Right.
Right. So the best course to follow would be take out what you know you're going to use in 12 months. Let's say you were taking out $10,000 a year, okay, to cover expenses, okay? And let's say you used $5,000, and then you had to seek Medicaid assistance. That additional $5,000 that you haven't used would be vulnerable. Am I correct?
That's correct. That would be counted as your asset, you know, and go towards the calculation of, you know, what the available assets are. So.
All right. My last question, and I thank you, is when the property is sold and you put the total amount of money into the trust, it can go in a registered investment account in the name of the trust. Am I correct?
Oh, it can. Yeah, absolutely. But you need your trustees to open that account. It has to be a trust account.
I understand. So it would be the way things are in there now is the trustee's name for the trust of so and so, and so the account would be registered the same way.
That's right. It would be. Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, your answers have been very direct and very helpful, and I thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for calling. That's great. So those are some questions that get a bit to the asset trust, which we haven't talked a lot about, but there are, you know, trusts that we establish to help you qualify for Medicaid based on the amount of assets that you have. And typically people put their home into that trust. It's very typical. It's an irrevocable trust that qualifies you for Medicaid. You know, if you have your house in there, there's really not much of a drawback to it because you're still living in your house. There's not much else going on. But as you can see, when you sell the house and you put that money into the trust, there are some more specific rules you have to follow regarding the funds in the trust. The funds basically are supposed to stay in the trust and not be touched except in, you know, certain circumstances. I wanted to get back to our discussion about the pooled income trust. And Sarah, this is going to show how old I am. I remember back in the day when people signed up for NYSARC, they got like a binder with actual papers to send in their checks every month and their disbursement requests. But if someone wants to be a little bit more tech savvy, you can do all that pretty much online now, can't you?
Yeah, so we do typically provide what we call a welcome packet to the individual that's voted on the application. That's going to include copies of your trust documents and all of the forms and information that you'll need to manage the account. And all of those documents are now also available on our online portal, which is a great tool that families are able to use to monitor the activity in a trust account. You can check the balance of the trust, manage, you know, tracking when your deposits are received, verifying those deposits by running reports that can be sent to Medicaid. You're able to track to see once you're starting to use the trust, when we've received a request and when things are going out for payment. And you can download the forms and documents that you need to manage the account, the disbursement request form so that you can ask us to pay a bill, deposit slips if you choose to mail in your deposit. You can also use the form to set up an electronic deposit. That's certainly the easiest way to get your monthly spend down to the trust. By signing up with us, we'll set it up with your bank to deposit your monthly spend down into the pooled trust on a day that you choose each month. And that tool is really great. It's not only helpful for family members who are assisting one of our, the consumer in our case is referred to as the beneficiary. And so it can be, you know, the beneficiary themselves, like Jordan logging in and managing her account, could be her daughter also, who might be authorized on the account assisting her. And it's also a great tool for professionals. NYSERC Trust Services works with a lot of law firms, attorneys who are assisting their clients with Medicaid applications, home care agencies, manage long-term care plans, geriatric care managers, professionals who are also assisting the individuals that we serve in maintaining their eligibility for these benefits, like doing recertifications and helping them, because each year for Medicaid, you do need to recertify for that coverage. So professionals can also log into this online portal, and they can manage all of the accounts that they have access to in one place. So they can quickly toggle between the different accounts, verify deposits, and access documents that they may need to submit to the appropriate agencies. And to Blaze's comment earlier, you know, we're hearing if you're not comfortable on a computer or you don't, you know, really want to be doing that, we also have an automated phone system. So you can call in and listen to a recording of your recent transactions. So that's something you can access at your own convenience. And we have a team of customer service representatives that are available from 8:30 to 5. We have exceptional customer service. Our team has been administering these types of trusts since 1972. So we're actually celebrating 50 years of service this year. It's very exciting. So our team is there to help answer your questions. We're very responsive, and we can help you in guiding you in the day-to-day management of the assets in the trust.
Sarah, I actually have a quick question about this, and I know we're getting close to the top here. So if, say if someone's rent changes or a bill amount changes, to submit that updated info, what's that process?
Yeah, so it depends on what type of bill. So we'll use rent as an example. We'll say Jordan decided for convenience that she wanted to set up her rent on automatic payment. So she fills out a form. She tells us how much her rent is and what day of the month it needs to be paid. So we're going to automatically pay that every month on that day. And then she gets a letter from her landlord that says, we're actually increasing your rent this month by $100. So what she'll do is simply fill out another automatic payment application requesting a change of the amount. And that could be not only for the amount, it could be the change in the landlord, change of where the landlord check needs to go, any sort of updates they need to make. They'll just fill out another form, attach a copy of the updated lease, or you could just give us an updated like monthly rent statement. And then we will make a change in our system to increase that amount so that the payments going forward are paying that in full. And of course, that does come down to, you know, the person needs to have that amount of money in the trust in order to, you know, increase it. But yes, that would be the typical process for an automatic payment. For expenses that fluctuate from month to month, like a cable bill or a utility bill, those are bills that they're submitting to us each month anyway. So as those amounts change each month, they'll submit a new request with the updated bill, and we will process payment based on what is due.
Thanks. Yeah, that definitely sounds like an easy process. And, you know,
Well, just to back up, this whole process is a little overwhelming, I know, for clients. You know, first of all, having your concern with trying to take care of your parents or relative in their home and make sure they get good care. But then there's all this additional, you know, paperwork and applications they have to go through. But both organizations of you have really great processes and great people to help you out through the different applications and things that you need to do. So just to kind of summarize, we've been talking with Blaze Bryant from CD Choices and Sarah Seswick from NYSARC about community Medicaid and how both of their organizations can help you with the community Medicaid process. And Blaze, why don't you give your organization's information so if people want to contact you, they can reach out to you?
Certainly. So Consumer Directed Choices, we've been working with seniors and people with disabilities since 2001. You can find us on the web at cdchoices.org. That's www.cdchoices.org, as well as on social media. No internet or no computer, no problem. You can give us a call at 518-464-0810. Again, that's 518-464-0810. I take calls all the time about people wanting more info about the program and how to get started with the process. So I'll give the floor back to Jane Marie and Sarah to give their contact info.
Sarah's with NYSARC, and if you give our office a call, if you didn't catch her contact info before, we'll give you her contact information. Thank you for spending another hour with us. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jane Marie.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.